Hi, everybody. I'm Dean Kane, and welcome to The Homeland here on Proud American Studios, where we discuss all things truth, justice, and the American way. We are here today at the Great American State Fair in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and I'm honored today to be joined by America's doctor, that's what I call you, sir, Dr. Mehmet Oz, administrator for CMS, which, as you all know, of course, is the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Dr. Oz, thank you so much for being here with me today out here on the National Mall, celebrating 250 years of America and 250 years of freedom, sir.
What a unique opportunity it is for us to say thank you to the country. And I must say, my father came here as an immigrant many years ago and could not believe America existed. For him, it was really the shining city on the hill. So this idea that the president has of a state fair that is a national experience, and I can see every one of the states listed there, and I've been to most of them. So this way I can get to all of them real quick.
I've been to 49 states. I made my 50th in before this fair. And then I made my 50th to, North Dakota, but it was the last state to visit. I made that visit yesterday or the day before. So I've been to all 50 now as well, because it's kind of like an embassy. You know, if you visit it, I think it counts. I think it should count.
I think so too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you think of the state fair? It's pretty awesome.
I love it. There are people here. Contrary yes. to what you might hear.
Why is it that people are saying that there's nobody here? I posted a picture from the Ferris wheel, and I said, what a great view. And then, of all people, it was Adam Kinzinger, former Congressman Adam Kinzinger, goes, well, nobody's there. Why would you post that picture? And it's because there's tons of people here. It's a huge space, and it's just going to get more and more crowded as the week goes on.
But not only do we have a lot of people here, we have people that you want to have here, like Stacey Garrity. That woman's going to be next governor of Pennsylvania.
There we go.
And so if you're hanging with people you want to spend time with, make a lot of noise with them.
100%. And there's a lot of noise here. We got the FIFA fan zone behind us. we got the World Cup going on. So we got the United States looking great. They played Turkey. I know you were originally born in Turkey. And so we gave them that win.
I was actually born here.
You're born here, but yes. Okay, that's how it is. Well, you are, I call you America's doctor, and you should. Let me just run, if you guys don't know, I'm going to run you through a quick little history, a very, very brief history of Dr. Mehmet Oz. You have an extremely storied and illustrious career, my friend, from playing safety at Harvard University on the football team. Yeah, he
Princeton,
was a safety.
He played at Princeton.
I played at Princeton. We beat them. No, we didn't. We didn't actually beat you. But you got your MD from the University of Pennsylvania. You had a tremendous medical career, cardiologist, to a television star, bigger star than me by far, 9 Emmy Awards. You're a best-selling author of 8 books. You got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I know this because I was there with you when you got it. And now you are the administrator for CMS, where you oversee federal health coverage for more than 160 million Americans. That's, you're clearly an underachiever, my friend. That's it. So I and probably millions of others call you America's doctor, and it makes perfect sense that you would be administrator for CMS, which is such a huge part of our, I mean, healthcare is the largest single category of federal spending at about 30%. I know you know this, ahead of Social Security, ahead of national defense, and ahead of the interest on the debt. Did you ever think, in all of the things that you have done, that you would end up as the head of CMS?
Well, I went to business school, actually, when I was in medical school, because
that's not enough just to do medical school.
I wanted to understand how medicine worked. And any of you who have gotten healthcare, you'll notice that the billing process comes first.
Yes,
and so I began to wonder, like, why is there such a problem with paying for these services? Why is it so much more expensive in America than other countries? What are the issues that we should be dealing with to allow our nation to cost the same as everybody else, maybe even better, because we should be healthier? And what I've learned, Dean, is that there are a couple of problems. One is we're not as healthy as other countries. We're heavier than other countries. We're twice as fat. Being blunt about it, we're about
pretty blunt. That's pretty straightforward.
43% obesity in America. It's 20% in Europe. It's 5% in Japan. And so we have some major things we can do for ourselves. That's why Maha Monday is so important. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here. You could be anywhere on the planet. You came here to ship in. I appreciate it. The second big challenge that we face is that the way we've built our system, there's lots of almost on purpose obstacles to getting care. And the reason for that is whenever there's an obstacle, friction in getting care, someone charges you to take care of the problem. So there's lots of middlemen involved in delivery of care in America. And we often don't value the right thing. We pay for procedures. We don't pay for value. I should say, okay, how much does it cost to take care of everybody at the fair today? The thousands and thousands of people who are here. If I took care of all of you for the whole year, what does that cost? That's a better way of doing it, because now I'm responsible for all of your care. I want to make sure you eat the right food, get the right exercise, sleep better. I get involved in prevention. I'll take care of the problems in the right way, because if it doesn't get taken care of, I got to pay for it down the road anyway. But the way the system has been built historically, because it was easier, was I'll just pay you for everything you do to a patient. So the more times I do things to you, the more drugs I give you, the more times I actually make it seem like you're sick, the more money I get paid.
That seems like the antithesis to common sense. And common sense is what I feel like you're bringing to the office and to the country. And it's huge. We've had a huge problem, and you've been amazing on it, with fraud. And fraud is how big of a problem is that for us?
Fraud is $100 billion a year of expense. And just to put that in context for everybody, if we could just use the money we're saving from fraud to help the Medicare Trust Fund, and that's the fund that's going to pay for Medicare for everybody when they retire. So if you're out there watching right now and you're working your tail off and you hope that when you retire, Medicare will be there for you, which many Americans don't think it'll be there, I got good news for you. You take the fraud out of Medicare, you double the life expectancy of the system. Think about that. You double it. That means it'll be there for you, your kids, and so on and so forth. So the fraud impact on the caliber of our system is dramatic. The other thing, Dean, is fraud corrupts the system. And this is actually a much bigger concern, because not only do they steal your money, they steal your health. And we can't tolerate that.
Yeah, it takes your life. You hear all these stories. I mean, you have wonderful organizations like St. Jude that they don't charge anybody for. And you start thinking about it as a normal person sitting here and you go, why is it so impossible to be able to pay for health care? Fraud is a huge issue. They've incentivized the wrong things, but you're here to fix it.
We are fixing it. And we got a great team. Kim Brand, who runs the group that does all the program integrity, that's what we call it, is there. But, you know, the problem that we're facing right now is that the basic infrastructure of the system has been weakened because the guardrails were taken down by the prior administration, and we're rebuilding. But a lot of the folks who used to do this left because they were told not to worry about fraud. They're told to just focus on enrolling more people. And that got so bad that in the last year, the Biden administration, they actually took 12 million people off themselves because these people didn't actually need insurance. They were insured elsewhere. They didn't want it, didn't desire it, and they were falsely enrolled.
So there has been a recent thing in the news talking about how there was 1 million people who have been pulled off the ACA who didn't have or being in the process of being pulled off who didn't have Social Security numbers. Did I see that correctly or what?
Shocking, isn't it?
That's a huge...
Let me unwrap this because you guys should be as angry as we are about this. 1 million people were enrolled in the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare exchanges, who did not have Social Security numbers. Just to remind everybody, in order to be eligible to get very, very discounted insurance on Obamacare, you have to be making within a small range of income, 1 to 4 times the poverty level. If we don't know your Social Security number, how do we know how much money you made? And here's the bigger news. Since you can't actually sign up without a Social Security number normally, it makes me think that someone got involved and fraudulently enrolled people. Turns out that's what we're finding. The majority of these people aren't real. They're ghosts. It's a hoax.
They don't even know that. Some of them don't even know they're probably enrolled, right?
Sure they don't. Oh, here's this. You're going to love this. When you're on Obamacare, you can get insurance like anybody else. 40% of
you can get insurance for anybody else?
I'm sorry. You can get coverage with your insurance like everybody else.
Like, oh, okay.
We'll pay the bills. We'll pay for your medications, your surgery, doctor's office visits. Most people, let me ask you this question. Who out there has insurance? Put your hands up. All right. How many of you use it once a year? Once a year. Just about everybody. That's normal. Most people, if they pay for insurance, will buy a medication. They'll pay for a procedure. It comes up, right? 40% of people on Obamacare have never used their insurance once. They don't know they have the insurance. They're not real people. And that's this problem that we've been fighting over now politically is becoming a little more heated. Obamacare historically had 9 million people in it. Now it's over 23 million. That's impossible. Where did those people come from? We don't think they are legitimately enrolled.
I got an idea where they may have come from as an ICE agent. We have a problem with illegals getting, so there's Medicare and there's Medicaid. Medicare is fully funded by the federal government, and that's for the older people. What is the age for that, by the way?
65, over 65 years of age for the rest of your life.
I'm getting there.
I just got there. I just got there. Come on now.
Congratulations. And you look so good. You look so good. You know, you want your doctor to look good, and you look fantastic, sir. And that's important. You don't want your doctor rolling in going, hey, I should tell you what you should do. So I love what you and Secretary Kennedy are doing. I think it's incredible. I think it makes common sense. And I feel like we haven't had common sense in these positions. So we've been getting the runaround and getting fleeced as American citizens. Americans should be angry.
Well, common sense is not so common. And there has, without question, been an almost overt effort to just not worry about fraud because it's so ugly. But it corrupts the system. It hurts us in ways that go far beyond the human being stealing from us. And remember, they're taking advantage of our most vulnerable Americans. And so when they get away with that, they're able to take that money and reinvest it in other fraud and make it even worse than it would have been. We see this now in hospice in California, where one third of all the hospices in the whole country are in Los Angeles. We see this in New York, where we have these things called personal care service. Folks, these are basically your kids being paid to carry the groceries upstairs to your home. You're paying for things your family would normally do for you for free.
I do it for my parents now.
Right. But imagine if I paid you. Now, here's the catch. It's that job I just described is the most common job in New York.
In the state of New York, that's the most common job.
Well, it's more than twice the closest competing job. Why? Because we take people who probably might have been unemployed. You give them a little bit of a menial task. You pay them. The state doesn't mind that, Dean, because the state says, hey, you know what? This person would have been unemployed. I would have had to pay them benefits. Now I can just put them on the federal payroll. Yeah, they're not doing that much, but, well, you know, it's good money, and I can tax it. And here's the part that really concerns.
Oh, they tax that money, too, of course.
Oh, they tax that money.
Of course.
But here's the part that really gets me. They enroll those folks in the union. And once they're in the union, now they want to take Medicaid money and put those numbers, put that money into the union dues, which, of course, allows the unions to then pay for certain candidates. That's political patronage. And that's the much bigger issue, the why. Like, why would we allow this to happen? Because it's not a flaw in some states. It's a feature.
So my son is 26 years old. He's off my insurance this year. It just happened. So I have to get personal insurance for him. My parents are in their 80s. He could be their personal care person. We even talked about it at one point in time. And then all this fraud started getting exposed, and he's not doing that now, by the way. We're in the state of Nevada. But it doesn't make sense that happens, because that care, and again, it's the largest single expenditure in the federal government's entire budget.
Yep.
I mean, so what you do affects every single person sitting out here. Every bit of fraud that you bust, every bit of fix in the system goes directly towards us getting better care.
The best thing about fraud for everyone to remember, besides the fact that it protects the sanctity of our most vulnerable, and that's what we should be doing it for, is we can actually address many of our financial shortfalls if we just take the fraud and the abuse and the waste out of the system. We have the money to provide the care that all Americans need. We have gone aggressively at some issues, like pricing of pharmaceutical drugs, which we'll talk about in a second. But the easiest way to make healthcare more affordable in America is to take the fraud out of it. Take the middlemen out if they're not helping make it better. Take out the people who game the system. And remember, whenever there's friction in a system like this, someone's taking a toll. Someone's putting a little bit of money in their pocket. Someone's just dipping their beak in the water. A little something for the effort. That's what happens. And that adds up, you know, into trillions of dollars of budget. That adds up to hundreds of billions of dollars of money.
Hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, people were upset that President Trump spent $13 million, $14 million in the reflecting pool. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. That's just incredible. Having the expertise that you've had as a cardiologist and being, on your show for so many years and winning all those dang Emmys, You're aware of the system, so you know this. So you're about the best person to be able to be in there to fix it.
Well, I've always loved understanding why things happen. I think many of us have that natural instinct. In medicine, it's a good habit to have because you want to understand the root cause of the problem. So when we saw the corruption numbers start to pile up when I came in last year, we began trying to understand why was it happening. Now, remember, I'm going to brag on my team for a second. CMS has the best people in the planet to do this. They're smart insurance executives. They're actuarials. These people could get paid twice as much money on the outside. They come to work for us for the same reason. They always give the same reason. I was given a gift by God that I felt I could share with America, and I came in here to serve. If you don't let them serve, that's a problem. And that pathology begins to ramp up pretty quickly if you don't start to address the root cause, which is people start to leave. And so we got very wise about the motivation. And once you begin to parse out how people take the money off the table and put it in their pocket and walk out, you realize that, yes, there are many factors at play, but the most important one is, are we watching? How we sent the message out to the fraudsters that we're here looking at them. And a lot of this started during COVID because people said, we're not going to check. We're too nervous. We're too scared. We don't want to give any problems. So just do whatever you're going to do, and we're not going to follow up. That taught a generation of crooks to steal from us. We have foreign multinational corporations taking money out of our pocket. These are gangster groups, often funded by foreign countries.
I saw a guy come back from, where was he? Where did they find him? They found somebody over... I don't know where they got him from, some other country. They brought him back. Oh, the guy from Somalia. They brought him back from the feeding our families or whatever that was. His fraud was about $6.5 or $8.5 billion.
Yeah.
Those numbers are incredible, and it affects every single person in the United States who really relies on Medicare or Medicaid or any sort of our health benefits at all.
Well, that's a very good way of segueing to the bigger message is we can't get away from us. You know, don't walk away from this conversation. You run because we're coming after you. And the reality is, if you don't trace down these criminals overseas and bring them back, these gangsters think they can put the money. Look, these are real cases. They'll take tens of millions of dollars, buy gold, put them in their suitcase, and fly back to their native country. Again, they're not Americans. In their country, everyone steals, so they're stealing too. And we're here to say, no, that's not how it works here, right? And what happened this past week, we had a big announcement with Department of Justice, Todd Blanche, Cash Patel, Colin McDonald, all these really great folks at Department of Justice, and busting their tail. But they have now gone over to other countries, to the Philippines, to Turkey, and those governments are working with us, supporting us. They are finding the villains, dragging them to the airport, sending them back to America. We put them in jail here, and they face their crimes. And once they're caught, they can't believe it, because that is a massive departure from the way it used to be.
So fraudsters, be on notice. Dr. Oz is in the house. Be on notice.
Don't walk. You start running.
Now, people have been saying, you know, there's been fraud. We've sort of known there's fraud, and nothing is happening. Things are happening now. You guys are really getting on it.
At a massive pace. I think a lot of this is because you have an all-government approach. Everyone's working together. And so I'll give you two concrete examples. If I find out that someone's stealing money, well, a couple of things. First off, if I tell the Department of Justice and they don't act on it, well, then they're not going to jail. They stole the money. We paid it out. We got to chase the money down. It never happened. So we now are actually finding out where the fraudsters are and not paying them. I'll get news for you. Last year, we stopped $42 billion from leaving our building, which is right over there. $42 billion never left the room, never left the building, because we understood how these guys work. But when they do steal the money, DOJ goes after them with everything they have. And if I can't find where the money went, I go to Treasury and Scott Bessent tracks down what's going down. Maybe the money laundering can be identified through their tools, which are actually quite sophisticated. And here's the best part. If someone steals from Medicaid, guess what else they're doing? They're not paying their taxes.
Ooh.
So we can send the names to the IRS, and I can just say, hey, listen, I don't want to know anything more. You guys do with this yourselves. But these people made this much money illegally. Did they declare their taxes for the money they stole from us? Right? Thieves steal everywhere. So get into their heads. And of course, this is an area where we are using AI quite aggressively, because we don't think like fraudsters. And we learned this from the financial sector. Bank managers are bad at fraud. They don't think like that. But AI can think like a fraudster, identify tactics that are being used to steal from the bank, and it sort of equalizes the playing field. We're using that now so that we can get doctors to understand how fraudsters think.
And you understand the system so well, it's not going to get by you. And that's a good thing. But we have you're talking about a whole of government approach, which I love. It's DOJ. It's the Secretary of Treasury. It's IRS. Everybody getting together. And that seems like common sense, but it wasn't happening before.
Well, unfortunately, when we start assuming that people will do the right thing, you have to ask yourself two big questions. If really smart people don't do it, maybe they didn't want to do it. So I think that was one fundamental reality, that if you don't score the right things, then the wrong things happen. The second reality is you have to empower people. And if people are working in silos and not allowed to collaborate, and we don't actually have a whole of government approach, you're going to falter. This is why what President Trump did was so important when he announced that the vice president, I mean, the top person beneath the president, is running the anti-fraud task force. That's a very loud signal to the government and to criminals. To the government that says, guys, stop fooling around. No more silos. Work together. And we do. And then you've got the criminals thinking, my gosh, these guys are serious. I better go defraud banks. I'm getting out of the healthcare fraud space.
Now, you mentioned AI helping out. So AI, obviously, is the technology and the futuristic tools and things. In the world of medicine, now, I'm an optimist. I'm always an optimist. I always think in positive terms. I love this country. I think you guys are doing such a great job. I feel like wonderful things are on the horizon. How big is technology in what's happening now in the world of health and in the world of CMS?
Dean, we can save probably 20% of all the money we spend if we use technology wisely. And we're making a massive investment in all the things having to do with my program. We have systems that were built in the 70s. They're outdated. They're not based in the cloud. So if you want to use newer technologies to help patients, you can't do that as readily. We're addressing all that. And this month, we're announcing with Amy Gleason, who runs this initiative, a tech transformation. Every major tech company on the planet is working with us. All the American companies are trying to help patients get their health data and use it if they want to get better outcomes for themselves. So you might have a bad diagnosis, want a second opinion. You might actually know the problem, but you want better coaching. They do better with the actual day-to-day steps. You might just want to be able to connect with people like you to figure out better ways to deal with the crisis in your life. All of that stuff we're now beginning to facilitate. And I do think that although there's appropriate fear that should be out there around AI being used the wrong way, if we put guardrails on it and appropriately push these systems to behave themselves, then the American people, if they desire, you have to choose this, it's up to you, but if you desire it, you'll be able to get access to these tools and use them to better your life. It is hard to imagine how fast our basic interactions with AI are growing, and they're going to continue. It's up to us to make sure it's safe for the American people.
That's outstanding, and that's really good news. There's such a different focus under this administration, under Secretary Kennedy, under yourself, where preventative medicine is a huge part of it. Eating healthy, getting your sleep. I mean, it's all common sense, but it's things that we haven't been doing as a country.
Dean, we've made it hard to be healthy in America. The MAHA movement, at its very core, is making it easier to be healthy. Being curious. And if you're curious, remember, 80% of statements are questions or statements in disguise. You don't actually get to the root cause, right? You think you know already. But if you're truly curious and asking real questions, then if you have Secretary Kennedy's courage to actually speak about what you find, people begin to look up and say, yeah, you know, it is harder for me to raise healthy kids than it was for my mom to raise me. And these are changes we want to think about in our family. And maybe we want to double check the drinking water, but also get back to the basics when it comes to screen time and, you know, teach the kids how to cook real food, which, by the way, when you cook real food, it is affordable oftentimes.
Absolutely. I'm our chef at the house. I'm the meat and potatoes guy. So I cook all the right. My son's girlfriend, she gets all fancy pantsy and does all that stuff. But I'm just like, there's a bunch of chicken. There's a bunch of beef. I've cooked it. It's in there. My son just walks by, grabs a piece of chicken and cruises along throughout his day. And I think that's great. It's real food. It's all these common sense things that I think America's gotten away from. Now, we've got a lot of people visiting from all over the world here, cruising through America, going to places like Buc-ee's and things like that, which might not be the thing that you would recommend. But, you know, we've got our unlimited refills and things like that they're noticing may not be the best things for America. But they're experiencing America and loving the experiences here in America. And I think that's fantastic.
So let me ask you a question. How many people are going to leave America to go home and be stopped in immigration because of a difference of appearance, ranch dressing? You see these AI-generated versions of America, of Europeans who have come here 40 pounds heavier as they go home. But I actually think this is, look, there are parts of the country, some of the states here in the South especially, where gravy is a beverage.
Yes.
And we have to be honest about the reality that there's nothing healthier than having a good time with your family and your friends. So I'm going to grant you that right now. But your default normal meal should not, I don't think, be in such great violation of the food pyramid that we just put out.
Yeah, I love that you guys have flipped the food pyramid on its head completely. I grew up with the food pyramid going, okay, these are the things I'm supposed to eat. Turns out those are the wrong things. That's why I'm so unhealthy.
Well, look at schools. Oh. So we told schools that whole fat milk wasn't good for the kids. So they took the fat out of the milk. When you take the fat out of milk, what's left? Sugar. So then to make the kids drink the sugary milk, because they don't like skim milk, I don't like it either, they added chocolate syrup into the skim milk. The calories are the same as the original milk from the cow. But it's not good for them. It's all carbs. And that's the kind of problem we cannot afford to have.
And we have it rampant throughout our entire country, and you guys are cleaning that up.
Well, the secretary led this charge. He's very passionate about it, and he looks great, as you can tell, because he follows his own diet. He eats mostly a meat and fermented like sauerkraut diet, and it works really well. It actually tastes pretty good. I got to have you had dinner plenty of times, and I have to admit he's got something on me.
You're coming around to it.
When I'm with him, that's what I eat, and you do feel good, and you're satiated for a long time. But part of this game is also making sure that we bring it into our medical schools, and here's why. If you do not teach doctors about nutrition in medical school, they think it doesn't matter. I actually ran for student body president when I was in medical school on the platform that we're going to bring nutrition into the school system. And at my school, we still have it, but there's plenty of schools in America that we're not teaching nutrition. And it's not just any nutrition, it's culinary nutrition. I'll give you an example of the difference. If I tell you to go eat lycopene, you can go to a store and buy a pill of lycopene. But then you might think, well, don't they have lycopene in nature? Well, the answer is yes, they have lycopene. Lycopene in nature is found in tomatoes. So if you chew into a tomato, do you get the lycopene? Well, here's the catch. Not really. You can't absorb the lycopene that well. So you know how you get lycopene from a tomato? You skin it, heat it up, skin it, crush it, and mix it with some fat, like oil, like olive oil. That's called pasta sauce.
Yum.
And so pasta sauce has the best source of lycopene that we can get our hands on. I think it's brilliant that in nature we have the best way of getting lycopene. The real message is, how do you teach the average person to do that? How does a doctor communicate that to a patient so they realize how important that is? And that's a mission that we have right now. And most medicals in this country, most of the medicals are signing up to pledge to join us in this battle.
So it looks like we are on the precipice of a golden age here in America, not just for the country, but for our health.
We are in a golden age for a lot of reasons. We have access to the food. Our farmers who have struggled, we have a lot of support from the administration behind them now. There's a lot of emphasis on the value of high-quality food. That's good for vendors who are in that space. We also have, I think, a country that's woken up to the reality that the most valuable thing we do is take care of each other and have a healthy population. Let me put this in context, Dean, that people can resonate to. If we can get the average American to feel healthy enough, to feel so vigorous, so with it, that they want to work just one more year, that's worth, for our GDP, for our nation, $1 trillion a year. Think about that. Just getting people to want to work one more year beyond 61 to 62, or be healthy enough to work their whole life, or start one year earlier. Just that one extra year of work contributes $1 trillion to our gross national product. Think about how much of an impact that has on our debt, on all the taxes we would have to pay. All that, by the way, gets supported with Medicare, Medicaid, all the different things that I'm responsible for administering.
That's incredible. I've dropped a huge amount of weight in the last couple of years. I stopped drinking. I'm eating, you know, steak and chicken and all the right things and doing the right things. And I was doing it right about when you guys came into office. So I want to thank you. And America wants to thank you, Dr. Oz. Please, a round of applause for Dr. Oz, America's doctor,
God bless.
Making us healthy.
Thank you very much.
Maha Monday it is. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Mehmet Oz. Thank you very much, Dr. Oz. Appreciate the heck out of you, sir.
Thanks, my friend.
God bless.
Miss you.
Thank you.